Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MMH orders more tests and masks. Hospital improves 6-8 nurse phone capacity, Myers says, by Caitlin Randall. Midland Memorial Hospital has ordered 1,000 rapid response COVID-19 tests, an additional supply of N95 masks, and has increased phone capacity on its 6-8 nurse hotline, President Russell Myers said at a press conference Wednesday morning. The test ordered is made by biotechnology company Cepheid and is the first FDA-approved rapid response coronavirus test. It returns results within 45 minutes and does not need to be processed at an external lab. 1,000 tests isn't going to go very far, as you can imagine. So we've had some internal discussion about policy for using that testing capability, and at least initially we're going to limit the use of those tests to patients who are in the hospital. He said after the hospital uses the first allotment of tests and has a sense of how rapidly they use the test, they'll know if they can broaden that testing capacity beyond patients inside the hospital. Meyer said it's possible they won't receive the full order of rapid response tests if the supplier is struggling to keep up with demand. They could receive as few as 400. He expects them to arrive by the end of this week or early next week. Hospital staff are more optimistic about the amount of personal protection equipment they have than they were previously. He said there have been a significant number of donations from the community, and they've also placed an order for more N95 masks. After 6-8 Nurse was plagued with shortages as the volume of calls to the hotline increased, MMH increased the phone capacity. As of Tuesday night, we've added significant capacity to our phone lines. We're continuing to work on a project that will dramatically and permanently expand phone capacity here. People should have better success getting through to 6-8 Nurse today than they have in the past. The hospital is encouraging residents to call 6-8 Nurse if they believe they are having symptoms of the coronavirus, rather than going to the emergency department. The CDC has also released a symptom self-checker that can be found on the Texas Department of State Health Services website. As of Wednesday morning, 169 residents have been tested, and results have been received for only a handful of those tests. 4 Midlanders have tested positive, including a man in his 60s who died on Tuesday. No additional information will be released about the patient who died. We had interaction with his family Tuesday and agreed with them that no further information will be shared about the patient and his life. He did die during the day. He said the health department may choose to share more information about where the patient traveled at a later date. They believe he traveled domestically, Myers said. We've said from the beginning that this is a travel-related event. I don't think we know a lot more than that, he said. Officials, nice weather doesn't mean break from social distancing, by Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at hearstnp.com. One of the nice weather weekends in recent memory is not a reason to take a break from the discipline that leaders have preached about social distancing. That was the message from Unified Command team members Wednesday during their daily media briefing during the COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. Larry Wilson at Midland Memorial Hospital said the warmer and drier weather that is expected to continue into the weekend is good for people and can help kill the virus. According to my infectious disease doctor, dry, warm air is not good for a virus that likes to live in water droplets. So this is the kind of environment we're hoping will begin to stem the tide, maybe reduce the burden, and help us get back to our lives. After a forecasted high temperature in the 90s today, the National Weather Service is calling for a high of 86 degrees on Friday, 70 on Saturday, and 75 on Sunday. Wilson said Midlanders should take advantage of the wellness opportunities that warmer weather provides, including getting the heart rate up a little bit. Just get outside and take a walk, go for a run, take a bike ride, do all the things you can do spaced out. Most respiratory viruses live in warm, moist environments, and if you dry out the environment or heat it, they don't live nearly as well. Like Wilson, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said the community is very much on high alert. Warmer weather does not mean an opportunity for social gathering. He also said the weekend isn't an opportunity to congregate with others in large numbers, because people have been relatively isolated throughout the week. Everybody is going to think that it's the weekend. Therefore, we can take a break from the discipline of what we're having to apply for the care of those around us. Just because it's the weekend doesn't mean we're off high alert. We're still asking people to stay home and take care of yourself and care of one another. Our goal is to get to April 4th, and then we'll have to see where we are. From the business page on Thursday, March 26, 2020, number of unemployment claims continues to rise. By Mella McEwen. With frustration soaring along with layoffs amid the coronavirus pandemic, the Texas Workforce Commission is urging patience and wants Texans to know how the agency is stepping up to help those who find themselves suddenly unemployed. In a Facebook Live event Wednesday, TWC Executive Director Ed Cerna cited the magnitude of the economic impact of the pandemic, its pervasiveness, and the number of people impacted. On a normal day, we take 13,000 to 14,000 calls daily. We have four around the state. On March 22nd, we took 100,000 calls into one of our centers with the same number of staff members. He estimated the number of people trying to get into one of the call centers was in excess of 800,000. A week ago, the commission's unemployment insurance director, the commissioners, an increase in the volume of claims from 3,000 to 9,000. The next day, we hit 25,000 claims, and it's risen every day since. We know this is very frustrating and oftentimes scary, especially for individuals being let go, oftentimes for the first time. I assure you, we will help everyone who needs help. I ask you to have a little patience with us. He said the commission is working as quickly as it can to expand capacity, first assigning staff from other divisions to the call centers and expanding hours. Beginning Saturday, the centers will be staffed from 8 to 5. The commission is also looking to hire 100 temporary workers for the call centers. Since most claims are taken online, he said the commission is increasing server capacity, the size of servers, and the number of servers to accommodate more online visitors. And he said the company is looking at other more creative ways to use technology to serve people. He urged those needing help to continue calling the call centers and accessing the website at different times. We are continuing to improve, and by improve, I mean in days, not weeks or months, as government sometimes does, sometimes over the course of just a day. In other efforts, he said the commission is changing child care requirements, especially for first responders, to ensure that their families are cared for while they work. The work search requirement has been waived, as has the one-week waiting period before receiving benefits. In addition, he said those who received unemployment benefits in the past and who may have been overpaid will have that debt deferred, meaning the commission won't take deductions from current benefits until the debt is paid off. He also said there is enough funding to support all those impacted by the pandemic, and the commission will seek additional funding from the federal government if necessary. The rescue package pending in Congress should also help the commission address the needs of independent contractors and the self-employed who were impacted by the pandemic. Peyton, West Texas Food Bank can use residents' help. By Stuart Doreen, sdoreen@hearstnp.com. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said Wednesday the West Texas Food Bank can use the community's support. Peyton said during an afternoon press conference that the oil price downturn and the pandemic have placed an economic hardship on the region. There is a great demand on the food at the West Texas that the West Texas Food Bank provides. Peyton emphasized that the West Texas Food Bank serves multiple counties across the region. He also said he has received photos showing a line of vehicles at the Midland location stretching from the back door and all the way out to Andrews Highway, car after car filled with people who are in dire need of food. It's going to be on us to make sure we get the food to the food bank. It's going to be up to us to see how we can partner with them to make sure they have everything they need. Understand that doesn't mean you go to the food bank and see if you can volunteer, because then we're going to be doing things we shouldn't be doing. The reality is we do have an economic crisis and we have a pending physical crisis if we don't take care of things we need to do. And so I guess the sobering note to all of us is these are serious times that demand serious action and wise action by serious people here in this community. So I'm asking you and imploring you, if you want to use this word, I'm begging you to pay attention to what you're being asked to do. practice your social distancing. Don't do things just because you think you can and that nobody can tell you what to do. It's time for us to sacrifice for one another aggressively to get past this. The West Texas Food Bank is at 1601 West Cliff Drive. Their phone number is 697-4003. Online, it's WTXFOODBANK.org, WestTexasFoodBank.org. The Midland Pantry drive-thru hours are Tuesday and Friday from 9 to noon and Wednesday afternoon from 1 to 4. Midland Senior Centers Check on Members by Caitlin Randall. Midland Senior Centers have been calling their members to ask if they need assistance and provide information on resources. We are calling each of our senior center members, making sure they are doing okay and asking what their needs are right now and how we can assist. Tracy Renton, Development Director for Senior Life Midland, said, "We're here to protect them." She said they have 1,000 members between the two centers, the Southeast Senior Center and the Midland Senior Center. Both centers are closed to the public through at least this Friday. Senior Life is continuing its Meals on Wheels program and also referring members to the West Texas Food Bank's Senior Grab and Go boxes. At this point, we are calling to check on their well-being and make sure they're safe. We also know they need to talk to someone and get reassurance that everything's going to be okay. The West Texas Food Bank's senior boxes are distributed through a drive-thru at the Midland location from 9 a.m. to noon on Tuesdays and Thursdays. More information on Senior Life can be found at seniorlifemidland.com.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, March 26th, 2020. Front page. Hamilton resigns council. Other members to decide who to appoint. By Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O, at OAOA.com. Just as Tuesday's city council meeting was ending, often embattled District 1 council member Malcolm Hamilton resigned, saying his priority was his family. Hamilton announced his resignation after taking issue with several items dealing with preparation for the coronavirus situation. Hamilton asked if there would be any facilities willing to take people in if the coronavirus hits Odessa and overwhelms hospitals. "I'm concerned about us and our preparation," he said. He asked if hotels like the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center would accommodate sick patients if hospitals were to be overwhelmed. "A lot of these hotels," he said, "have Odessa citizens' money in their pocket, and so I think it behooves them to show the people how much they're appreciative of them by, if need be, stepping in should it get to that point." Mayor David Turner said that community officials have activated the Emergency Operations Center, which allows more federal and state money and equipment to come in. Unfortunately, right now, they're allocating tests and things like that for communities that have it, Turner said. Odessa City Manager Michael Marrero said that one hotel owner did reach out to the city to offer the use of one of their facilities, if needed, to help isolate people. Hamilton said he was infuriated with this fact of we are lacking in a lot of areas where we should have already been caught up. However, the most affected by this will be the elderly, he said. Of course, kids as well. Well, I know District 1 has a lot of those elderly people, and a lot of those people are going to need help. However, we seem to want to pick and choose where we want to allocate funds. Turner said, "No, we're not picking and choosing." District 2 Councilmember Dewey Bryant said that's not what they are doing at all. "You could believe whatever you think," Bryant said. Hamilton said Bryant could think what he wanted as well. Turner moved on to the consent agenda, and District 4 Councilmember Tom Sprawls asked to pull the sexually oriented business ordinance from the consent agenda. The City Council voted to remove the utilities policy that would have prevented sexually oriented business employees from renewing or applying for their SOB license if they were late on their Odessa utility bills during the time of application. At-large Councilmember Peggy Dean, who was outspoken against the utilities policy, thanked the council for removing it before it was moved to a motion. The council unanimously approved the SOB ordinance, but after removing the utilities policy. They approved the other facets of the ordinance, however, which will still extend the distance a SOB can be from a school or church from 600 feet to 1,500 feet, and will require those SOBs to have human trafficking signs in Spanish. They are already required in English. Odessa Senior Assistant City Attorney Dan Jones said that Building and Collections is going to try to put in a computer system at some point that will be able to read if a person has a water account and a permit. Right now, they have two programs, he said, and neither one of them talk. Jones said that this wouldn't be just for sexually oriented businesses. Let's say if a builder comes in and they haven't paid their water bill, well, we won't give them a permit to build. Same thing with entertainer and non-entertainer, he said. Jones projected that it would be in around a year or two, but they would need to wait until they received the technology that could show utility holders who also were applying or reapplying for any permit. The City Council also extended the Mayor's Declaration of Local Disaster from March 18th, which Governor Greg Abbott's declaration holds precedent over. The Mayor's Declaration will be in place until City Council terminates it, even if that time comes after Abbott's ends at midnight on April 3rd. Before Turner entertained a motion to adjourn, Hamilton said, "I'd like to announce something. I'd like to formally announce my resignation as of today. It's been a pleasure serving with every one of you guys, but I feel like it is time to take care of my priorities, which is my family and my children." In a phone interview, District 5 Councilmember Mary Willis said that she wished Hamilton well on his endeavors and thanked him for his service to the citizens of Odessa. As far as what will happen to the seat, she said that they do not know yet what will happen. "The people of District 1 will have to be represented," she said. "I'm sure that they will get someone from that district to represent them for now until, you know, the election in November. I'm not sure what process that will take, but I'm sure that it would not go unrepresented." Dean said that there will not be a special election because there was less than a year left in Hamilton's term, and that City Council will consider accepting Hamilton's resignation at the next City Council meeting on April 7. City Secretary Norma Aguilar-Grimaldo said that City Council will vote to appoint someone new to the District 1 seat and that City Council will have to decide how they want to go about the process. That person would have to meet the regular requirements to serve on the City Council, including living in the district within the past 6 months. Grimaldo said that if the council decided not to appoint someone, then the seat would remain vacant until after the November elections. Dean said that Hamilton was a pleasure to work with and that none of us knew that was coming and that she didn't think anyone had any time to consider an appointee. "We were all pretty surprised by it," she said. Councilmember Hamilton said he had no comment after Tuesday night's meeting. Retirees see lifestyle changes during pandemic. By Sam Waller. S-W-A-L-L-E-R at OAOA.com. People throughout Odessa and the Permian Basin, not to mention the rest of the state and country, are slowly coming to grips with life under restrictions imposed in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Life at Lincoln Tower, an independent living facility for retirees located in the middle of downtown Odessa, has seen its share of disruption. I think everybody's probably mad at the situation, resident Judy Harkey said. They understand it, but they don't like it. Everybody knows this is the state that we're in. Among the biggest changes has been the suspension of serving meals in a communal dining room. For the past week, meals have been delivered to residents' apartments. Another change has been limiting visitation to essential visitors, such as caregivers and healthcare providers. For Jack Harkey, Judy's husband, such precautions are necessary despite any hardships they may cause. I have no problem with the way it's being handled, he said. I think that our government is doing a fine job, from the city and county officials to the governor to the president. I think it's being handled like it needs to be handled. Yes, it's inconvenient, but what's not? There's a lot of things that get inconvenient. I'm not being able to drive for Uber right now because the doctor said I can't. So I'm stuck here in the building along with everybody else. That's the way it is. We go get what we can when we can. It'll all work out. Mobility was already an issue for some residents, a situation compounded by Lincoln Tower's suspension of bus service and a weekly shopping excursion. I think we've limited the going out, Louise Chambers said. I just go when it's absolutely necessary, when it's something I have to have. It's put a strain on everybody, not being able to do what they please, but we realize this is necessary to keep this thing from spreading. Resident Mike Bates, who is blind and does not drive, has made up for the loss of shopping trips by ordering online. He was awaiting his first delivery on Tuesday. I'm going out a lot. I'm walking about 4 miles a day, Bates said. But once I get here, I get depressed up in my room. When I can get out and walk a little bit, I'll be fine. This is really the best place for me. Not being able to get to my doctor is a problem. I'm not going to die, but that bothers me. Getting prescriptions renewed, they refresh them, but the doctor's not there. For Chambers and other residents, it's not the first time life has undergone sudden change. I grew up in World War II, she said. The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and we didn't know where or who would bomb us next. Everything was rationed, food, clothing. Travel was restricted, but people didn't panic like they have with this. We just handled it. Nobody complained about it. Judy Harkey said having such life experience makes it easier for older residents to deal with the situation. I think the difference is from World War II is we've become such a spoiled society, she said. Back then, we were still not that far off the Depression, so they understood a little bit. The young ones now, from probably 70 down, didn't go through anything like that, so they don't know how to handle it. We went through oil field busts, but nothing like this. Bates said taking the necessary precautions to maintain personal health in the face of the outbreak is a priority. You've just got to make the best of it and take your medications, he said. Check your blood pressure and temperature and everything every day and just not get sick. Stop signs and door monitors are positioned at the entrance to Lincoln Tower to screen those entering the building. Visitors to the retirement community are no longer allowed into the building unless they are essential medical personnel. Ben Powell, Odessa American. Bubba's 33 shows appreciation with free burger. First responders, medical professionals receive meal. By Royal McGregor, RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. On Tuesday, Bubba's 33 began a program that gives first responders and local hospital staff a free burger when they show their badge. Lisa Jenkins, who works as a nurse at Excel ER, said she knows medical professionals in the area are appreciative for the restaurant's generosity. Excel ER is located less than 100 yards from Bubba's 33. The free burger program is scheduled to continue until 8 p.m. today. If all the patients leave, we eat because we know it doesn't last long, Jenkins said during an interview on Wednesday afternoon. Humberto Astorga, a managing partner for the Bubba's 33 in Odessa, explained that medical professionals can be overlooked. However, during the coronavirus pandemic, these jobs are crucial. Bubba's 33 is using car side ordering and delivery that customers can pull into the business's parking lot, order, and wait for their food. Astorga said medical professionals have placed large orders for multiple doctors and nurses, and his staff will have it ready for pickup. They are some of the most important people in the world right now, Astorga said about medical professionals. Looking at the news and seeing they are working double shifts and they don't have a life right now, we are trying to give a little bit of comfort. Jenkins said Excel ER has experienced an influx of calls due to the outbreak. As of 3 p.m. Wednesday afternoon, Ector County didn't have a positive case of the coronavirus. We have to tell people that call about the screening process because you have to do a screening process in order to get tested for the virus, Jenkins said. We've had an influx of calls. People want to be tested because they are scared. Honestly, panic is the worst thing right now. Quick hits. Midland reports fourth case. The City of Midland Health Department is currently conducting their investigation on one new confirmed case of COVID-19 in Midland County, bringing the overall case count to four. The fourth confirmed case is a female in her 20s that was tested at a private provider. The source of exposure is currently unknown, a news release said. The City of Midland Health Department will continue to monitor the individual in accordance with the CDC. One death was reported Tuesday by Midland Memorial Hospital. In Texas, the Department of State Health Services, DSHS, website said 13,235 tests have been conducted and a total of 974 cases have been reported and 12 deaths as of 8 p.m. Tuesday. The CDC website said there are 54,453 cases of COVID-19 in the United States and 737 total deaths as of 4 p.m. Tuesday. The Ector County Health Department website says at this time there are no confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Ector County. CBS 7 also reported Wednesday that the Reeves County Hospital District said they have their first confirmed case of COVID-19. According to hospital officials, the patient is a person who works and lives in Pecos, the CBS 7 website said. No other details were given on the patient or where they believe the patient contracted the virus, the site said. See the CDC website at tinyurl.com/QQT3AQ6 and DSHS at tinyurl.com/WGMGUES. Landgraf provides COVID-19 info. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, R. Odessa, has launched a web page to provide information and resources related to the novel COVID-19 virus to keep his constituents informed and safe. The web page can be accessed through this URL, tinyurl.com/SV4AO2R. The webpage provides ways to access various state and local government agencies, the Texas Students Meal Finder map, which will allow Texas parents to locate education facilities serving meals in local communities, and information on how to volunteer or help the state identify sources of additional medical supplies from staff reports. Other corona news, OA News at OAOA.com. A citywide prayer drive has been scheduled to begin at 10 a.m. Saturday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center parking lot, 1310 North Farm Road, 1788 Midland. Stay in your car, turn on your lights, and let's drive and pray together. The drive will go east to Midland on 191, circle around Loop 250, drive on I-20 west toward Odessa, circle Loop 338 back to 191, and end back at the Wagner Noel. Visit tinyurl.com/SX46C39. The Ector County Independent School District Counseling and Social Work Departments has scheduled a student and family support line from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday. Call 456-HELP, 456-4357. For calls involving immediate danger to self or others, call Permian Care 24/7 Crisis Hotline at 844-420-3964. Visit tinyurl.com/U5JNAHM. The Belltone Foundation is offering anyone in the Permian Basin that wears hearing aids free batteries during COVID-19. The batteries will be mailed to the patient's home. In addition, Belltone Hearing Centers is also offering curbside assistance for routine services such as hearing aid cleanings, repairs, and supply pickups, batteries, filters, etc. Call upon arrival. Belltone Hearing Centers are located at 4011 JBS Parkway, 3320519, 4519 North Garfield, Suite 8, Midland, 432-682-2180, 106 West Marcy Drive, Big Spring, 432-263-6181, 2703 College Avenue, Snyder, 325-515-5233, 402 East Holland Avenue, Alpine, 432-332-0519. Visit www.facebook.com/BelltoneTexas/. For businesses that are struggling to pay the full amount of sales taxes collected in February, may call the Texas Comptroller of Public Account Enforcement Hotline, 800-252-8880. Learn about your options for remaining in compliance and avoiding interest and late fees on taxes due. In addition, there are a variety of online tools for businesses seeking assistance. See COVID-19 Emergency Response webpage, https://comptroller, Texas.gov/about/emergency/. For access to online tools, tutorials, and other resources for tax services, and to establish 24/7 online account access with web file. The Crisis Center of West Texas is in need of donations. Intake Advocates answers the hotline every single day of the year, and domestic and sexual violence shows no signs of slowing during the pandemic. A donation of $21 covers the cost crisis hotline for one day. $37 ensures the hotline stays up and running and covers the cost of a day of service for work phones for counselors, case managers, and advocates who rely on phone calls to safely stay in contact with the survivors they serve. Donate at tinyurl.com/THGPUOH or call 332-2527. For shelter or other services, call 866-627-4747. Band Directors Talk Shop is inviting music students nationwide who may join at 7 p.m. weeknights at #MusicConnectsUs, #PorchConcert, #ConcertsAcrossTheCountry. Visit tinyurl.com/TFFDUBD or banddirectorstalkshop.com. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for March 26th, 2020. OAOA.com. Court weighs COVID-19 reports. Panel doesn't declare a disaster in absence of local cases. By Bob Campbell. BCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners Tuesday morning heard a series of reports from county officials about the COVID-19 pandemic and said afterwards that they were satisfied with the actions that had been taken. Noting that no cases had been discovered in the county, the court declined to follow suit with the cities of Odessa and Midland and most of the rest of the United States and declare a local disaster. The 67-minute meeting was live-streamed on the county's webpage, but the audio was so garbled it was unintelligible. Precinct 1 Commissioner Eddie Shelton said afterward that reports were taken from Sheriff Mike Griffiths, Senior Centers Director Donna Greaves, and Emergency Manager Rick George, with Griffiths saying he had shut down the detention center's lobby just south of Odessa, off the west side of U.S. 385, and had stopped the visitations of inmates except for consultations with their lawyers. Having faced a May 26th runoff with former City Councilman Mike Gardner, Shelton noted that Governor Greg Abbott had moved the Republican primary runoff to July 14th with no Democrat in the race. Reporting that there'd been no COVID-19 cases at the jail, Griffiths said the facility was fully stocked with plenty of masks, gloves, and aprons, hopefully to thwart the virus if any comes in. Greaves had closed the senior centers on the north, south, and west sides of town at 1225 Adams Avenue, 900 South Dixie Boulevard, and 2265 West Sycamore Drive, but she said word had quickly spread about the continuing meals provision program at the Northside Senior Center and that 56 people had come by Monday to carry out meals or had called to have them delivered. Greaves said people may call 432-337-5281 to get on the list for their meals to be delivered the next day, or they may come by the Northside Center between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. to pick up. We haven't added up the numbers yet, but I think we'll be over 60 today, Greaves said early Tuesday afternoon. Our goal is to provide at least one nutritious meal a day to our seniors 60 and older. We're still trying to maintain that here. Shelton said George told the court he had established an emergency operations center at UTPB. We're taking all the necessary precautions and putting staffing in place to handle any more orders from the state or federal authorities and any cases or issues that come up, the commissioner said. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said Monday that he and Judge Debbie Hayes had consulted with Health Department Director Brandy Garcia and others to ascertain if a local disaster should be declared and a countywide emergency operations center established. Childers said an EOC would be spread out in several locations. We have structured an organizational chart to meet all the U.S. Centers for Disease Control guidelines, Childers said. It's an ever-changing atmosphere that we're living in right now, and we are not sure what will come out of it. Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez took part in the 10 a.m. Tuesday meeting, but wasn't visible on the live stream because he was out of sight on the right, having brought a chair to distance himself from other court members in deference to the pandemic. In other business, Hayes and the commissioners renewed an immunization contract with the Texas Department of State Health Services and okayed Grievous's proposals to hire nurses and part-time nurses for the jail and approve assigning deputies certified by the Texas Commission on Jail Standards to fill open positions at the jail. The court invoked an emergency to approve 4 personnel requests from the health department, enacting a job description for the nursing administrator, promoting the public health nurse to nursing administrator, okaying a job description for the water quality specialist, and promoting the inspector to sanitarian. Efforts were unsuccessful to contact a health department spokesman to identify the new nursing administrator, the water quality specialist, and the new sanitarian. Shelton explained that the moves had to be declared emergencies because they were unbudgeted.
The following is from the opinion page from the Millen Reporter Telegram, Thursday, March 26th, 2020. This is a local opinion by Millen Reporter Telegram, Stuart Doreen. Opinion extra. Take note which leaders are helping flatten the curve. By now, you know, Lieutenant Dan Patrick stepped in it pretty good. Speaking with Fox News' Tucker Carlson, Patrick said the following. You know, Tucker, no one reached out to me and said, as a senior citizen, are you willing to take a chance on your survival in exchange for keeping the America that all America loves for you, for your children and grandchildren? And if that's the exchange, I'm all in. From what I can tell, that is the comment that launched 1,000 articles and editorials. That is the comment that made an otherwise blah interview the story of the day. It was a mistake by Patrick, who coincidentally made his name on talk radio. I have to admit I didn't think much of the interview the first time I saw it on YouTube. I had to go back and listen for that quote that allegedly turned Patrick into a conservative monster looking to serve up senior citizens to the altar of whatever is out there to stop coronavirus in its tracks. In my view, the only comment that stayed with me was the following. Our biggest gift we give to country, children, and grandchildren is the legacy of the country. Coronavirus has wrecked the economy. On that, he was spot on. However, by the end of the interview between two conservatives, it was too little, too late. The more head-scratching part of the interview was that Patrick, the leader of the Texas Senate, wasn't playing the role of key lieutenant for Governor Greg Abbott, Texas's top Republican. Abbott has been successful in walking the fine line between health and economics. As a conservative, I'm more disappointed that Patrick wasn't telling Americans that Texas's governor was doing it right. Texas policies are spot on, and personal responsibility matters more than any law legislators can put into place. I think the governor is doing everything he can to honor what we believe as Texans and as Americans about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and our freedoms, and helping people be responsible for this, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said. You see, leaders are out there, and Texans should take note of those who are part of the leadership that will flatten the curve and promote personal responsibility, including social distancing and proper hygiene, and the ones who are not. At the end of the day, it is easy to see the line following the great governor of the great state of Texas. The only line following the lieutenant governor is those swinging haymakers and landing more often than not.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, March 26th, 2020, opinion page. Texas View. Patchwork quilt of virus prevention works better than expected. The point, leaving decisions and decrees largely to local authorities is what a governor should do, especially in a state as large and diverse as ours. Governor Greg Abbott was doing only as a governor should, following federal guidance in response to a world crisis, when he ordered temporary closures of restaurants, bars, gyms, and schools, and limited social gatherings to 10 people. Before that, on matters involving coronavirus, Abbott left the decisions and decrees largely to local authorities. That also is what a governor should do, especially in a state as large and diverse as ours, with three of the nation's 10 largest cities, Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas, and 64 towns with populations fewer than 100. It made sense for Houston to have and to use its own authority to shut down bars and restaurants before Abbott acted Thursday. It also made sense for cities the size of Hondo and smaller to have and use the authority to put it off until Abbott superseded them. Houston has more than 10,000 restaurants. That's more restaurants than Hondo has people, which just goes to show that in Texas, one size can't fit them all. Even the school districts across the state were exercising independence in how to blend education with coronavirus prevention until Abbott finally intervened. Some had extended their spring breaks, others hadn't. Earlier in the week, on Tuesday, even as he activated the National Guard, he said when asked if he'd consider closing beaches to spring breakers, that the decision belonged to the county judges and mayors of coastal counties. This is the right attitude for a governor. With rare exceptions, such as this coronavirus thing, Abbott should keep in mind that someone like him, who has spent nearly his entire adult life in Austin, doesn't always know what's best for Abilene or Aransas Pass. There are risks to having this patchwork quilt of decision-making across Texas, but it was very Texan of Abbott to have chosen to respect home rule until his hand was forced by events bigger than Texas. This is a refreshing departure for Abbott, who has been no friend of home rule since he took office in 2015. Indeed, no sooner had he been elected than he began decrying the patchwork quilt of local regulation across Texas. And indeed, it would not be unfair of anyone who has served as a mayor or county judge anywhere in Texas during Abbott's time as governor to liken him to King George III on the matter of home rule. Abbott has gone out of his way to usurp cities and counties' authority to protect trees, ban single-use plastic bags, required drivers of so-called rideshare companies, such as Uber and Lyft, to be fingerprinted, and ban fracking inside of city limits. Last year, he enthusiastically endorsed and signed into law new limits on property tax increases. Property taxes are the primary funding source for cities, counties, and school districts. Restricting their authority to tax restricts their capacity to grow. You're not likely to find two cities more different than Austin and Fort Stockton, both of which adopted plastic bag bans until they lost that authority. They are unique pieces of fabric in the patchwork quilt of cities that comprise Texas. The point is that a patchwork quilt is a good thing, and we're glad Abbott is starting to see it, even if a pandemic is what it took. The hesitance he has shown lately toward exertion of power seems less King George, more George Washington. We won't forget the erosion of local authority under Abbott. We are not inclined ever to give up on recovering what was lost. But the respect he has shown more recently is appreciated, and it will work in his favor as the virus spreads and he finds it necessary to exert more authority. The buy-in he is earning could save lives. El Paso Times.
This is Trish. I'm reading the obituaries for March 26th, 2020. The first obituary I'm going to read in its entirety, and the other ones I will abbreviate just to have survivors and service information. But I'm reading the first one because, unfortunately, this is someone that the recording library knows well, Miss Stella DeVia. She worked tirelessly over the last few years to aid people who had significant vision loss through her work with the National Federation of the Blind. Estelita Stella Quiroz Davila. Estelita Stella Quiroz Davila passed peacefully at home on Sunday, March 22, 2020. Stella was born in Odessa, Texas on February 28, 1950 to Raul and Natalia Quiroz. Stella graduated from Odessa High School in 1968 and earned her Bachelor of Education from Angelo State University. She married Gilbert C. Davila Jr. on February 17, 1979, and the couple resided in Midland, where they raised a family of two. Stella was an educator for 35-plus years, primarily teaching first grade at De Zavala Elementary in Midland, Texas. She implemented many educational programs during her career, such as the Veterans Day and Cinco de Mayo programs. After she retired from MISD, she continued to be an educator, becoming the president of the National Federation of the Blind chapter in West Texas. This organization strives to educate blind people and the community that blindness does not define one's life. An enthusiastic group came together to support one another and to solve issues faced by those in the blindness community. Stella traveled to Washington, D.C. and lobbied to protect and promote the rights of blind people. She is preceded in death by her father, Raul R. Quiroz, and is survived by her husband of 40 years, Gilbert C. Davila Jr., her son, Gilbert Christopher Davila, and his wife, Selena Ann Davila, son, Gabriel Craig Davila, all of Midland, Texas. Stella's greatest blessing was her only granddaughter, Camilla Rose. She's also survived by her mother, Natalia K. Quiroz of San Antonio, Texas, sister Linda Nunez and husband Raymond of League City, Texas, sister Mary Lou Quiroz of San Antonio, Texas, sister Patricia Severino and husband Michael of Dripping Springs, Texas, brother Raul Quiroz Jr. and wife Karen of Stockdale, Texas. All services are being kept to family-only attendance due to the current requirements of gathering size. Mrs. Davila will be available for public viewing on Thursday, March 26th from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that you please make a donation to the National Federation of the Blind at nfb.org/donate in memory of Estelita Davila. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Retta Jo Dutton Bleeker, 88, of Midland, Texas, passed away Monday, March 23rd. Retta is survived by her daughters, Susan McKinney and husband Tim, Julie Wittard and husband Rod, Caroline Giesel and husband Gordon, sister-in-law Cheryl Dutton, grandchildren Erica, Tolliver, and Scout McKinney, Taylor and Connor Giesel, Kelton Woodard and Meg Baines, and great-grandson Carson Giesel, and nephews Greg Dutton, Jeff Dutton, and Tony Dutton. Private graveside services for the family will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, March 27th, 2020, at Caradan Cemetery in Goldthwaite, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Blaylock Funeral Home of Brownwood. Online condolences for the family are welcome at blaylockfuneralhome.com. Memorials can be made to High Plains Children's Home in Amarillo, P.O. Box 7448, Amarillo, Texas 79114. Tommy Eugene Atchison passed away at the age of 78 on Sunday, March 15th at Midland Memorial Hospital. Memorial services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 28th, 2020 at Evergreen Cemetery Chapel in Stanton, Texas. He is survived by two sons, James Atchison and Tommy Atchison, one daughter, Cindy Bright, two brothers, Dwight Atchison and Charles Atchison. His arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. death notices. Charles Lanny Simmons. Charles Lanny Simmons, 74, of Odessa, passed away on Tuesday, March 24th. No services have been scheduled at this time, but arrangements are being done through American Heritage Cemetery. Deborah Schenck, S-C-H-E-N-C-K. Deborah Schenck passed away March 21st, 2020. Memorial services will be held at a later date. Survivors include her brother, Alan. Arrangements are under the direction of Stanton Memorial Funeral Home.
Grocery store hours during coronavirus. Albertsons Market, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 1002 Andrews Highway. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Customers 60 plus. Orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. For shoppers 60 plus, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Meeting today, Hospital District, 11:30 a.m., Administration Boardroom. MSW offers education resources post-collection highlights. The Museum of the Southwest has compiled a list of art and science education resources and education companies that are offering free subscription access during school closures, according to a release from the museum. The list is continually being updated at msw.teachon.com. People can access a list of activities and supplies for use with their kids. Also, the museum is posting on Facebook and Instagram objects from its collection. Educational videos have also been posted to their Facebook. MOUTD limits lobby hours. Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District has announced limited hours for its Greyhound ticketing lobby. The lobby, located at 10300 Younger Road in Midland, will be open 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. daily. Greyhound ticketing agents will be available during that time to assist customers, according to a press year. The limited lobby hours may also affect Easy Rider customers. Easy Rider representatives will still be available 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. For more information, call 561-9990. MISD is serving meals. Midland ISD Child Nutrition Services, CNS, will provide free breakfast and lunch to students who want them. Students do not have to be on free or reduced lunch to receive a meal. Meals are grab-and-go and may be picked up at any of the locations. Also, academic enrichment packets may be picked up at the meal sites. More information is available at www.midlandisd.net/COVID-19. Breakfast will be served 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. and lunch will be served 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. at the following locations. Elementary schools, Bonham, East Parking, Drive. Bowie, West Parking. Bunch, East Bus Drive. Burnett, East Parking, Drive. Bush, North Bus, Parent Drive. DeZavala, East Parent Drive. Fannin, West Parent Drive. Franks, East Service Loop Drive. Great House, West Service Loop Drive. Henderson, West Parent Drive. Lamar, East Service Loop Drive. Long, East Street Parking. Milam, East Street Parking. Parker, West Bus Drive. Pease, West Parking Drive. Rusk, East Bus Drive. Santa Rita, West Drive. Scarborough, South Parking Drive. South, North Street Curb. Travis, South Parent Drive. Yarborough, North Bus Drive. Secondary schools, San Jacinto, East Bush Drive. Goddard, East Staff Parking. Midland High, A Street Band Hall Service Loop. South Interstate 20, Mobile Sites, yellow MISD bus. Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 Highway 349, Valley View Baptist Church, 5500 FM 1213, Twin Oaks Mobile Home Park, 5200 South County Road, 1200.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.